We're on Chaf Aleph Amid Beis, the second line up from the bottom by the two dots where it says Velo. Our Mishnah presented a dispute between Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim regarding a person who swore he would not eat. And then he ate a very small amount, less than a kezias, less than the volume of an olive. Rabbi Akiva said that he is liable. The Chachamim said he's not liable. And the Chachamim and the Mishnah challenged Rabbi Akiva's position by asking Rabbi Akiva, where is there precedent anywhere in the Torah that says a person can be liable for eating less than a kezias, the standard or minimum amount of how much a person must eat for it to be considered a halachic act of eating, is generally a kezias. So they asked Rabbi Akiva, how could you say that even though he had a tiny amount, a few crumbs, that makes him liable for breaking his oath not to eat? Later we'll discuss Rabbi Akiva's answer to this question, but the Gemara begins by analyzing the Rabbanan's claim that there's no precedent anywhere else in the Torah when a person is liable for eating less than a kezias, less than the volume of an olive. Gemara says, "Velo, is there no such precedent?" But seemingly there is. Ve'arei nimala. For behold, we have the case of a person who eats an ant. Whereas we learn in Makos, the halacha is he's liable for that, even if the ant is less than the volume of a kezias. Gemara responds, that halacha is not relevant to the conversation here between the Rabbanan and Rabbi Akiva for Bir Yashani. In that case of an ant, where you're dealing with an entire creature, that is different, meaning that there's a specific reason why a person is indeed liable if he eats an ant, even if it's less than the volume of an olive, and that is because this is an entire creature. So that quality makes this little ant significant and enough to make the person liable. But that's a special case, and the Rabbanan are correct to say that there's a general rule. The definition of eating in the Torah is eating at least the kezias. The Gemara asks further, v'harei hegdish. What about the case of hegdish? That is, if somebody consecrates something, let's say he happens to consecrate food, he donates it to the base of Migdash. So now, of course, it has a holy status such that nobody could derive any benefit from it. And the halacha is that if somebody does benefit from this food that was consecrated, even if he benefited from less than kezias, it was less than the size of an olive, he will be liable. So again, the Rabbanan's claim that the person can never be liable if it's less than kezias seems questionable. Gemara responds that the premise of the question that there's no minimum amount to be liable in the case of hegdish is not true. For in reality, haba'inan shava pruta. In order to be liable for illegally benefiting from hegdish, we require the person benefited from an amount of whatever the hegdish property was that's worth at least a shava pruta. And so it remains true that Rabbi Akiva cannot find a precedent in the case of hegdish, because the hegdish too, it's not as if there's no minimum, that even the tiniest amount would make him liable. Not true, it has to be worth at least a shava pruta. So the case of hegdish would not refute the Chachamim's question on Rabbi Akiva. But now the Gemara asks, but v'harei mefaresh. Behold, surely the Rabbanan agree that if the person stated explicitly in his oath that he's swearing not to benefit from even the smallest amount, well then of course, if he ate even a tiny amount, he would be liable. So seemingly, this case refutes the Rabbanan's premise that there's no case anywhere in the Torah that a person's liable for eating a minute amount. The Gemara points out, within the very topic we're discussing, the laws of Shavuos, we do have such a case. But the Gemara responds that this case would not refute the Rabbanan's point either, for mefaresh nami kibir yadami. What is the understanding of why, when a person swears, I won't eat even the smallest amount, why he'll be liable for eating even the smallest amount? We essentially have the same kind of logic that we explain in the case where somebody eats an ant, which is that, okay, if you're dealing with an entire creature, then it makes sense that in that particular case, we count even the smallest creature to be significant. Same thing over here. This person decided to consider eating even the tiniest crumb as significant. Okay, if he decided to view eating even less than a kezias as significant, then of course the oath he makes will follow that definition, that personal definition that he gave. But the Rabbanan still have a point here in our case, where the person simply swore, I will not eat, the Rabbanan say, I will not eat, should not refer to less than a kezias, because in general, less than a kezias is not considered eating. Okay, if he specifically said that a tiny amount is significant, that's different, but that's not our case. The Gemara asks further on the Rabbanan's question, V'harei afar, what about a case where somebody swears, and I swear I will not eat dirt? As we'll soon see, Rava has a question about this case. And Rava considers the possibility that since dirt is not edible, therefore, perhaps this person's intention was to prohibit even the smallest amount of dirt. So according to that, you know, possibility that Rava considers, this case of offer would seem to contradict the Rabbanan's assertion that, you know, you can't be liable unless you eat at least the kazayas. Well, not true. Possibly in the case of offer of dirt. The Gemara says, Ella, rather, what are you going to say? How are you going to respond to this question? You'll say that, I guess, the halacha is that even by dirt, if a person swears not to eat dirt, he's only liable if he has at least the kazayas amount of dirt. But the Gemara points out, if you're going to say that, continuing to chav beizim and aleph now, tifshot debayi rava. Well, it means then that you're committing to, you know, one side of Rava's question, and you know, you're saying that the Rabbanan's opinion in the Mishnah should resolve Rav's question. And Rav's question was, Shvua shelo achal afar, we'll see later, Rav's going to ask, if somebody swears, I will not eat dirt. V'yachal afar, and he eats some dirt, bekama, how much dirt does he have to eat to be liable? And Rav again says, maybe he has to eat a whole kezias amount. So, problem is, according to what is currently being suggested, tifshon ad ikka kezias, the answer should be clear, that the only way to understand the Rabbanan's assertion in the Mishnah that you're never liable unless you have at least the amount of a kazayas, as if we say that by dirt as well, the person's only liable for violating the oath if he has a kazayas. And of course, this is not a desirable position to be in because Rava did have this question, and apparently Rava did not feel we could prove from the Rabbanan one way or the other. But the Gemara now responds that really, the case of Afar is not going to refute the Rabbanan's claim in the Mishnah. For Ki Amrinan, when are we saying, you know, when the Rabbanan and Rabbi Kiva having their discussion, B'midi de Barachila Kamrinan. The Rabbanan's assertion is limited to cases where you're talking about somebody who swears not to eat something that's edible. You want to ask me from a case of dirt, which is completely inedible? Okay, so Rabbanan would say that's different. And there, and by this inedible dirt, possibly we say that since it's not a food at all, maybe the person's intention was to swear, you know, not to even the smallest amount. So in that case wouldn't be a problem for the words of the Rabbanan either. The Gemara asks further, V'harei konamos. Now, what about a case of konamos? It means a person says, for example, this loaf of bread should be konam upon myself. Konam is a language of, it's almost like saying carbon. It should be like a prohibited as a sacrifice to me. And we will see later that when somebody pronounces such a konam, it prohibits him from eating even the most minute amount of whatever he pronounced the konam on. So this seems to refute the, you know, rule that the Rabbanan state in the Mishnah. The Gemara responds, konamos nami kemifaresh dami. The case of konamos as well is the equivalent of what we said earlier regarding a situation where somebody explicitly said that the oath should cover even the smallest amount. That is, when somebody pronounces a konam, typically he doesn't mention the word eating at all. He says, this loaf should be konam to me. Since the person does not mention the term eating, the Rabbanan therefore would say, oh yeah, sure, of course that's different. If he doesn't say the word eating, we weren't talking about that case there. Well, let's assume that even the smallest amount is included in the prohibition. Rabbanan are specifically saying that when a person swears, I won't eat, we should assume that it's limited to eating the minimum amount that the Torah defines as eating, i.e. at least the kazayas. So none of these other cases will refute the Rabbanan's argument in the Mishnah. The Gemara now quotes Rabbi Akiva's response in the Mishnah to the Rabbanan. Amr Lahan, Rabbi Kiva said back to them, Heicha namatsinu b'medaber umevi karbon, shezeh medaber umevi karbon. Says Rabbi Akiva, although I agree that if you're talking about a typical prohibition that involves eating, certainly it's true, the definition of eating is eating at least the gazayas. But this case is clearly exceptional. For where else do we find, Rabbi Kiva points out, that a person can become liable to bring an offering through speech, which is exactly what happens here. A person says some words, he says an oath, and if he violates that oath, the Torah says he must bring a carbon olav yoreh. Rabbi Kiva says this case is an exception, and that's why I say that even if the person eats the smallest amount, that is already considered a violation of the shvu, and therefore he must bring the carbon. So the Gemara now begins to question Rabbi Akiva's premise that nowhere else in the Torah do we find that a person says some words and has to bring a carbon. Gemara points out that doesn't seem to be true for velo, as there no such other example in the Torah. V'arei megadef. What about the case of a megadef, one who blasphemes, he curses Hashem? Somebody does that, according to Rabbi Akiva and Krisos, he must bring a carbon. So this is a situation where someone just said some words and as a result has to bring a carbon. How do we understand Rabbi Akiva's assertion that this case of a false oath is exceptional in this regard? The Gemara responds, Medaber v'oser kamrinan v'hai medaber v'chotehu. Rabbi Akiva's point is limited to the kind of case we're dealing with here, where the person through his speech creates a prohibition on himself, and the nature of that prohibition is that if he then violates it, he will have to bring a carbon. That is what Rabbi Akiva is saying is unique, as opposed to the case of the person who blasphemes, he curses Hashem, where the speech of the person is the sin itself. So that's a categorically different case, and therefore, you know, does not refute Rabbi Akiva's claim that our case, the person, you know, with his words makes a shvua, and then if he violates that, he brings an offering. That is unique, that's exceptional. But the Gemara questions further that seemingly, no, there is another case of this. For Vaharei Nazir, behold, there is the halacha of a Nazir, where this person says some words, stating that he accepts the terms of Nazirus. So meaning, just like by shvua, he's creating prohibitions upon himself, and at the end of that process, the Nazir has to bring a korbanos. So seemingly this shows that, you know, our case is not an exception. The Gemara responds, Mevi korbano al diburo kamrinan v'hai, Mevi korban leshteruye lechamrahu dikamaisi. The Gemara says, no, Nazir is different. That's also a very different case, because in order to be similar to our case, you have to find an example where the person is bringing that offering because of the words that he spoke. Of course, it's, you know, because of those words that created a shvua prohibition that creates the carbon obligation if he violates the shvua, as opposed to by nazir, where really it's two different things. The person makes himself a nazir, and that creates certain restrictions. The requirement to later bring sacrifices really is not connected with the prohibition that he created on himself. No, the function of the Nazir's sacrifices are simply to enable this person to resume doing these things, drinking wine, and do the other things that were restricted until now while he was a Nazir. So that case is totally different as well. It does not refute Rabbi Akiva. The Gemara asks, V'harei Hegdish. But seemingly we do have another case. Our case of Shua is not exceptional. For what about Hegdish, where a person with his words make something prohibited for benefit by declaring that this property now belongs to the base of Migdash, and that of course results in it being totally prohibited for benefit, and if somebody violates that prohibition, then under certain circumstances he would have to bring a carbon me'ila. So apparently Shvuah is not the only case where a person says some words, it creates a prohibition, and as a result of violating that prohibition, he has to bring an offering, which would seem then to refute Rabbi Akiva. Gemara responds, Oser la'atzmo kamrinan. Again, there's a key difference here. For Rabbi Akiva is referring to, we're talking about here in the situation of an oath where the person pronounced this prohibition specifically on himself. Whereas, Vehai Oser kol olam kulahu. This one, this person who made something property the base of Migdash, consecrated it, the result of that is to prohibit that thing to the entire world. So that is significantly different. It's not related to our case. That does not refute Rabbi Akiva. The Gemara asks another question, Hare Konamos. Seemingly we do find another example that's similar to our case of an oath, namely if the person pronounces a konam, which you mentioned above, the person says, for example, this loaf should be konam to me. What is the effect of such a pronouncement? It makes the loaf prohibited specifically to the person who made this declaration that it should be konam to him. And the Gemara presently assumes that the nature of the konam prohibition is, it's a me'ila. That is, that we say this loaf of bread, whatever it was he pronounced the konam on, is considered consecrated property specifically to this person who declared the konam. And if so, this would seem to be, you know, the same kind of thing as we have by Shvua, that through the person's words, it creates a prohibition, and if he violates that prohibition, we have to bring a carbon. In this case, it would be a carbon me'ila, because again, it's considered consecrated to him. The Gemara answers that Kisavar ein me'ila bekonamos. Rabbi Akiva doesn't hold like we assumed in the question. It is, in Rabbi Akiva's opinion, when somebody says konim on a loaf of bread or whatever it was, it does not make that thing hegdish to him. It's not actually considered hegdish, consecrated property, the base of Mikdash, that if the person benefited from it, there would be a carbon mi'ilah. According to Rabbi Akiva, that's not the halacha. It's prohibited, but it's not prohibited in the sense of being hegdish. And so there would be no carbon if the person illegally benefited from this, and therefore this is not the equivalent of our case of Shua. So Shua indeed, as Rabbi Akiva asserts, is an exception. And for that reason, Rabbi Akiva holds that even if he benefits from the smallest amount, once he violates that Shua by benefiting from even a tiny amount, he would have to bring that carbon olive yared. He's liable for violating the oath. Werna makes a point about the dispute, the Rabbanan Rabbi Akiva and our Mishnah, Merava. Rava said, Machlokes bestam. This dispute between Rabbi Akiva and the Rabbanan and the Mishnah is specifically in a case where the person did not specify the amount that he is swearing not to eat. He simply says, I swear, let's say tomorrow, I will not eat. So in this case, the Rabbanan say, unless he has at least the amount of a kazayas, he would not be liable for violating the oath. Aval b'mefaresh, but where? The person who made the oath explicitly, spelled out that he said, I swear I'm not going to eat anything, even the smallest amount. Well, then Rava says, divriya kol b'kol shehu. Then everybody, even the Rabbanan, will agree that even if he eats the most minute amount, he will be liable. My time, what's the reason? Because mefaresh nami ki bir yadami. I want to give an analogy to what we're saying in this case. It's similar to what we said above regarding the person who consumes an ant that is smaller than a kazayas, where everybody agrees, the halacha is the person's liable, even though it's less than the typical minimum amount that's considered eating of a kazayas. And the reason is because this thing is a whole creature. And so, logic dictates that, okay, we make an exception here. And even though it's smaller than a kazayas, still eating this is halachically significant. He'll be liable. So same thing essentially over here. True in general, eating less than a kazayas is not really considered halachically like eating. But if the person specifically said that to me, any amount of eating is considered significant, would be a violation of my oath, well then fine. So that's the terms he set. And the halacha is, everybody would agree that even if he ate the most minute amount, he would be liable. Rava makes another point, v'yomer Rava. Rava also said, machlokes b'shelo ochal. This dispute in the Rabbanan Rabbi Akiva is where the person said, I swear I will not eat. Aval b'shelo et om. But if the language was, he swore, I will not taste the food. Divrei kol b'kol shu. Then everybody agrees that if he had even the smallest amount, he violated the oath. He said, I won't taste. He tasted. And so the Rabbanan would agree in this case, even a very small amount would make him liable. Gemara wonders, pshita, seemingly this is obvious. Why does Rava even need to point this out? The Gemara answers, the ma with the same mo, that Rava, you might have said, what did this person mean, I will not taste? Litom nami kidyami inchi. Even this language, perhaps, that the person swore, I will not taste, he meant that in the sense of the way people commonly speak, that very often people will say, I want to go and taste something, they really mean I want to go and eat some of it. And if we went by that definition, then the halacha, according to the Rabbanan, would still be that he wouldn't violate the oath unless he had at least the kazayas, something that's halachically considered significant eating. Kamash Malan Rava therefore teaches us that it's not true. And in fact, we say if the words were, he says, I swear I will not even taste from this thing, well then even the Rabbanan would in fact agree that if he had even the slightest amount, it would violate the oath, and he would be liable. The Gemara continues with another point. Amar Rav Papa, Rav Papa said, Machlokes b'shvuos. This dispute, Rabbanan Rabbi Akiva, applies by oaths. Aval b'konamos divrei hakol b'kol shehu. But if you're talking about a different subject, where the person creates a prohibition through a konam, as mentioned earlier, a person says, this loaf should be konam to me. But this type of prohibition, everybody agrees that if the person went on to eat even the slightest amount, he would be liable. My time, what's the reason? Why are konamos different? The reason is, konamos nami, kiven de lo kematker shema, de achila kidemifarish dami. The reason is, because typically when a person pronounces a konam, he doesn't mention eating at all. He simply says, this loaf should be konam to me. Since the person doesn't mention eating, well, then the prohibition is not limited to what's considered halachically significant eating. He didn't mention eating. He just said, this thing is prohibited to me. Therefore, if he has even the slightest amount, he will be liable, according to all opinions. But the Gemara challenges this theory from a brisa. Meisva, they asked from the following brisa, which says, Shnei konamos mitstarfin. A person made two different konam vows, let's say on two different loaves of bread. The halacha is, those two konam vows can combine with each other. What does it mean they could combine with each other? It means that if he has a very small amount, less than a kazayas from each loaf, those two acts of eating will combine with each other to make the person liable. So, of course, this is the problematic line from the Braisa. As the Gemara will point out, this appears against the Rapapa just said that there is no minimum amount to be liable whatsoever by konamos. Let's read the entire Braisa. The Braisa then says, Shtei shvuos ein mitstarfos. But if a person made two different oaths not to eat, like one oath not to eat this loaf, another oath not to eat that loaf, if he went ahead and had a very small amount from each loaf, those two acts of eating would not combine with each other to make him liable. So says the first opinion in the Braisa. The Braisa continues that Rabbi Meir, however, says that konamos kishvuos, the law by the case of konamos is the same as by shvuos. And just as by shvuos they don't combine, so too by konamos the two different acts of eating do not combine. So the Gemara makes its point, which is v'isak edaitach chayiv b'kol shehu. If a papa is correct that there is no minimum amount to be liable whatsoever by konamos, lo mali letzarev. Why do I need this whole discussion about does it combine, does it not combine, but konamos? The whole discussion should be irrelevant. For according to Rapapa, you don't need to combine anything. As soon as the person eats the smallest amount, he'll be liable for breaking that konam. So it appears to be not like Rapapa. The Gemara answers, the case of this brisa is the Amar Achila Mizu Alai Konam, Achila Mizu Alai Konam. Even though we said earlier that typically when a person pronounces a konam, he doesn't include the word eat at all, but in this case he did. And his language in the Bryce's case was, he said, eating this loaf number one is konam on me, and eating from loaf number two is also a konam on me. Since he mentioned the word eating, he therefore will not be liable unless he actually eats an amount that's halachically considered eating, at least the kazayas. So in this case, the Bryce is teaching us that the two different konamos on these two different loaves combine with each other. First opinion says, if he eats half a kazayas from this loaf, another half from that loaf, those two acts of eating will combine to make him liable. The Gemara wonders, yachi, if so, if that was the language the person used, amai mitstarfos, why did the two acts of eating combine? Seeing as how, vizil lahacha lekashiura, since neither eating on its own reaches the threshold of a kazayas, neither one on its own is considered an act of eating, how does it make sense that we combine the two acts of eating? Because since this person declared these two separate konamos of two separate acts of eating and specified each act of eating separately on each loaf, it's not logical that the two different eatings should combine with each other. What do they have to do with each other? It's two totally different prohibitions of eating, specifically this loaf or that loaf. The Gemara answers by revising the language the person used here. The Gemara now says, "The Amar Achila Mishtehen Alai Konam." The person said, "Eating from both of them is Konam upon me." In this case, the halacha is that even though he mentioned the term Achila, he said it's only a violation of the Konam if I eat from them, so it has to be at least a kazayas. But still, even if he eats half a kazayas from this loaf and another half from the other loaf, those two acts of eating will combine because essentially he lumped it all together as one konam on both loaves. And so, it doesn't matter if he has half from this loaf, half from that loaf. As long as it adds up to kazayas, he'll be liable. The Gemara questions this. For then, the chavusa gabi shvuos, the amar shvua, shelo ochal mishtehen. That means then that the equivalent case, you have to follow through with the reading, and therefore the equivalent case by Shavuos would have to be the same kind of case where the person pronounced, he said, I swear not to eat from both of these loaves, and then he goes ahead and has half a kazayas from this loaf, half from the other loaf. The question is, amai ein mitstarfin? Why does the Tanakhama say that here the two acts of eating do not combine? Why not? Seemingly, here we should also say the person essentially lumped it all together into one grand oath that covers both of these loaves. So why shouldn't the acts of eating from each loaf combine? The Gemara answers, Amar Rav Pinchas, or Pinchas said, Shaini Shvuos mitoch shechalukos lechatos ein mitstarfos. We're talking about oaths, it's different. When the case involves oaths, as this case does, we say that since there's a special halacha by Shvuos, as will be taught in the Mishnah on Amid Beis, that says regarding the question of how many sacrifices the person has to bring, if he violates his oath, the Mishnah there talks about a case where a person swears that he says, I swear I will not eat wheat, barley, or spelt bread. So even though on the surface it appears to be one big oath, yet the Mishnah there says if the person eats wheat, barley, and spelt bread, it will be liable to three separate offerings. And the idea is that when it comes to Shavuos, we interpret it as a separate Shavuah on each type. Accordingly, with respect to our issue as well, we say, Ein mitstarfos. If he only has half a gazayas from one loaf and half a gazayas from the other, those two acts of eating do not combine, because when it comes to Shavuos, we consider it as if he made separate Shavuos on each loaf. Since they're considered totally separate Shavuos, you can't combine the eating of one with the other. If neither is the amount of a gazayas, he will not be liable. The Gemara is another question on the reading we're suggesting here. Yachi, if so, if that's the reading of the Braisa, then here's the problem. The Braisa continues with the Rimeir's opinion. Rimeir omer konamos kishvuos. Rimeir argues with the first opinion. He says, just as we do not combine by Shavuos, in the case of oaths, on these two loaves, so too by konamos. If you made a konam on the two loaves, we would not combine these two acts of eating in less than a kazayas. So the Gemara points out, the bishlama Shavuos. I understand why by Shavuos we don't combine, as we just explained, hol v'chalukos l'chatos. Because of this unique halacha, the Beishvuas, with regards to the carbon, we separate, you know, each type. We consider it like he made in multiple Shavuos. But why would we not combine, in this case, we said konam on both of these loaves, why don't we combine the acts of eating, in this case, according to Rabbi Meir? What's the reason? The Gemara answers by amending the Braisa a bit. The Gemara says, Epoch. You have to switch it around. It is, here's the real reading of the Braisa. Rimeir Omer, Rimeir in the Braisa says, Shavuos ke konamos. Not that konamos are like Shavuos, the opposite. Shavuos are like konamos. Which means that Rimeir is saying that just as you, the Tanakhama, said that we do combine the two acts of eating from each loaf with regards to konamos, we do the same thing by Shavuos. By Shavuos as well, we do combine the two acts of eating from both loaves to make the person liable. And meaning, we're suggesting that Viles Le Lid Rav Pinchas. Rav Meir does not accept the argument of Rav Pinchas that we mentioned above, that when it comes to Shavuos, we should not combine the two acts, since regarding carbon, consider each loaf separately. Rav Meir rejects that argument. He says, you know, carbon is one thing, whereas our discussion about where he eats a less than a gazayas from each loaf is a whole different matter. And therefore, by Shavuos as well, we combine. That's what the Gemara now suggests to read Rav Meir in the Braisa. One offers another approach now, as far as how we can reconcile this Braisa about Shavuos and Konamos with Rapapa's statement that when it comes to Konamos, if somebody prohibits the loaf themselves through Konam, there is no minimum amount whatsoever to make him liable. Again, the Gemara asked that from the Braisa it appears not so. It's talking about combining different acts of eating. There were less than a kazayas, which appears to be not like Rapapa. So now the Gemara suggests the answer as follows. Ravina Amar, Ravina said, Ki kamara papa leinyan malchus. With respect to what specifically is Rapapa saying, that there's no minimum amount, if somebody made a konam on some food, that no matter how small an amount he eats, he's liable. Papa was saying this specifically with regards to being liable to lashes. Whereas, Ki tanya hahi, what is that Braisa discussing? Rice is referring to le'inyan carbon, the ba'inan shavapruta. The Rice is saying that in order for a person to be liable to bring a carbon for his acts of eating from these two loaves that he pronounced a konam on each of the loaves, there is a minimum amount. That is, he does not have to bring a carbon unless he eats an amount that equals the value of the smallest denomination of coins, a pruta. And the logic for this is that, again, a papa says, you know, a person makes a konam on a loaf, he didn't mention eating. So the smallest amount he benefits would make him liable. And so if he did this deliberately, even if he eats a very small amount of the loaf that he made a konam on, he would be liable to lashes. Whereas the Braisa is talking about carbon, meaning that the idea of a konam is essentially it's like a person making this thing consecrated, as if it was consecrated to the Beis HaMikdash, to himself. And something that has a consecrated status carries the prohibition of Me'ila that says if the person inadvertently benefited from that, he ate that, he has to bring a carbon. But when it comes to this halach of carbon, it depends on a minimum amount of a Shavu Pruta. So that's what the Braisa talks about. You know, do the two different acts combine? Meaning, do they combine to total the amount of Shavu Pruta that would make him liable to bring the carbon? So according to this, there's no contradiction between her papa and the Braisa. The Gemara challenges this answer. Lememra de Savri Rabbanan, Yesh Me'ila Bekonamos. Now you're suggesting that the first opinion of this Braisa subscribes to the view that there is a punishment of Me'ila by Konamos. For again, that we say economy is essentially like you consecrated that thing, so something that's consecrated is subject to Me'ila, meaning a carbon. But is that really the Tanakhama's opinion? But I vilha tanya. But I, it says in a Braisa says, let's say somebody says, Kikar zu hegdish. This loaf of bread is hegdish. So this is a straightforward case of making something hegdish, consecrating it for the Beis HaMikdash. And so the halacha here is, viachla bein hu, bein chavero, either he or his friend, anybody, goes and eats this kikar, mo'al, he has committed an act of mi'ila. And furthermore, lefichach yesh la pidyam. Being that this loaf is considered hegdish, it's property of the Beis HaMikdash, also is subject to the halach of pidyon, of redemption, that a person could redeem this loaf from the Beis HaMikdash by paying. On the other hand, if somebody said, Kikar zu olai hegdish, he tries to say this loaf of bread should be hegdish specifically to me. Here the halacha is that if he went and ate this bread, hu ma'al, he would transgress mi'ila, that is, you know, he would be in violation of the prohibition, because, you know, he made it prohibited to himself. However, chavero lo mal, if his friend went and ate this loaf of bread, he would not be in violation of an isser of me'ila, because this loaf of bread is not truly hegdish. Rather, the person merely, you know, created a prohibition of hegdish to himself. You know, a person can make anything he wants, you know, prohibit it to himself, so that's what he did. But it's not truly consecrated for the Beis HaMikdash. And so, first of all, if somebody else benefited from it, there would not be an isser of me'ila, and lefichach ein lepidyon, since we're clearly saying it's not really hegdish, there is therefore no option of redeeming this, because it's not really, again, hegdish, it's not really property of the Beis HaMikdash, it's just the person pronounced the prohibition of hegdish on this thing to himself. Divrei Rabbi Meir, these are the words of Rabbi Meir. Turning to Amid Beis, v'chachamim omrim, but the chachamim say that no, bein hu, bein chavero, lo mal. Actually, in this case, where again he said, this thing, this loaf of bread, should be hegdish specifically to me. Chacham say, even if he himself benefits from it, that's not an isser of me'ila. Why is that? Lefi she'ein me'ila bikonamos. Because really, when a person says, this thing should be hegdish to me, that is basically making a konam on that thing. That's what konam means. Konam means is I want this thing to have a consecrated status to me specifically. Chacham say, that act, you know, that declaration does not make this loaf prohibited as hegdish whatsoever. So even if this person benefits from it, we don't call that an isser of me'ila. Isser of me'ila is reserved for a situation where the nature of the prohibition is a hegdish prohibition, something related to, you know, property of the Beis HaMikdash, at least, you know, in some sense. The Rabbanan here, the disputants of Rabbi Meir, say not at all, it's not related to the idea of Me'il, of Hegdish, which would then contradict the reading suggested above, that the Rabbanan of Rabbi Meir say that if added together from the two loaves, he ate an amount that's equivalent to the value of a pruta, he would have to bring a carbon for an isra of Me'ila. So here it's saying the opposite, that the Rabbanan say, yes, there is a concept of me'ila when a person makes a konam, when he makes this prohibited to himself specifically. So Ravina's reading appears to be refuted. The Gemara responds that we could say, epoch, reverse the opinions as reported in this second brisa that we just quoted. So it should read as follows. Echad ze ve'echad ze lo mo'al v'ishein me'ila mikonamos. Divrei Rabbi Meir. The Gemara suggests that really it was Rabbi Meir in this brisa who stated that even the person who himself declared a konam, he said, you know, this bread should be hegdish to me, even he would not be in violation of an isser of me'ila for benefiting for eating that bread, because there's no such thing as me'ila in this case. When a person makes a konem, that does not activate any kind of me'ila halacha. V'chachamim, or the chachamim say no. Hu mo'al. if he himself ate the bread, it would be an Isser of Me'ilah, of a Chaver Lamal, but not his friend, because again, he specifically stated the prohibition to himself. But regarding himself, indeed, the nature of the prohibition is like a Hegdish prohibition that is subject to Me'ilah. So now, the opinion of the Chachamim is consistent from one brisa to the other. But the Gemara asks, Ihachi, but if so, according to your new reading of the second brisa, let's look at Rabbi Meir in the first brisa. Rabbi Meir Omer Konomos Kishvuos. Rabbi Meir in the first brisa said that just as the two acts of eating don't combine by Shvuos, same thing by Konomos, these two acts of eating do not combine. So the problem is, Ela Konamos, it's Terufi, Hu Delo Mitztarfi. It clearly implies that by Konamos, Rimeir is arguing in the first opinion, he's saying, no, they don't combine. But that implies, Ha Mi'ila Isbahu. It's only that they don't combine, so that if each eating was less than a Shavaputa, then it wouldn't be an Isser of Mi'ila. Which implies that if the person ate from one of the loaves, an amount that was worth a Pruta, it would be an Isser of Me'ilah. You would have to bring a carbon, which of course would be problematic with the new way we're reading Brisa number 2. For according to that new reading, V'ho'amar Rabbi Meir, Ein Me'ilah v'konamos klal, just suggested that Rabbi Meir holds there's no such thing as Me'ilah whatsoever when it comes to konamos. And now you've went from a contradiction in the Rabbanan, and now it's just a contradiction in Rabbi Meir. But the Gemara answers, we could read Rabbi Meir in the first Brisa as follows, that L'divrein the Rabbanan ka'amr lehu. The Rabbi Meir in the first Brisa was humoring the view of the Rabbanan, which means like this. Rabbi Meir in the first Brisa says as follows, Lidi di ein me'ila bekonamos klal. In my own personal view, there's simply no such thing as me'ila by konamos. So the whole discussion really, according to me, is moot, since he could eat hundreds of zuz worth of this loaf, and still he won't be liable to carbon, because we're talking about a konam here. A konam never creates an obligation to bring a carbon for any kind of isser of me'ila. But Rabbi Meir is saying as follows, L'ditchu, but even according to your view, that there is a me'ila prohibition by this case of a konam, Odu li mias de konamos kishvus, you should agree with me that in our situation, where neither act of eating, from either loaf, amounted to a shavapruta, you should agree that just like by shvuas, the two acts of eating do not combine to make him liable, so too, that should be the halacha by konamos. But Rabbanan, the Rabbanan, say back to this, that no, in our opinion, Shavuos Ika the Rav Pinchas. Rabbanan say, no, these two topics of Shavuos and Konamos are very different. For by Shavuos, indeed we view each act of eating separately based on Rav Pinchas' argument that we already find that the Torah separates with respect to Shavuos as regards bringing a carbon, as we'll see in the Mishnah below. Since we find already that the Torah, uniquely by Shavuos, tells us to separate the different types of bread, so we also separate with respect to, this case where the person had two different eatings from two different loaves, each less than a shavapruta. Whereas the konamos leka der pinchas, there's no such equivalent argument by konamos, and therefore we say that if the person made a konam on these two loaves, the two acts of eating, each act less than a shavapruta, they would combine. Where it continues now with Amar Rava. Rava said, Shvua shelo ochal v'yachal afar. Let's say somebody swore, will not eat, and then he ate dirt, potter. He's exempt here because eating dirt is not considered an act of eating. Dirt's inedible. Rava now has a question that we referred to earlier. Boy Rava. Rava asked, what if the person made a shvua? He said, Shvua shelo ochal afar. He said, I swear I will not eat dirt. The question is, become, how much dirt would he have to eat to become liable? And here are the two possibilities. Perhaps we say, Kivin the Omar Shelo Ochal Daite Akazayas. On the one hand, you could argue that since his words were, I swear I will not eat this dirt, so maybe we should go by the traditional definition of eating, which is at least the Kazayas amount, size of an olive. Odom, or maybe Kivin the Lav Midi the Ochli Inchihu Bekal Shehu. Or maybe we say that since, of course, dirt is not something that normal people eat, therefore maybe we should assume that his intention was Bekal Shehu, to prohibit with his oath even the smallest amount of dirt. That is, since it doesn't really make sense to talk about eating dirt, it's never considered an act of eating, therefore maybe the more logical way to interpret this is that he means if I have the slightest amount, it would be a violation of the oath. Where it says, take a let this question stand, we don't have an answer to this question. Rav asked another question, Boy Rav asked, on the assumption that we go the second way in the previous question, that we say if he made the oath about something that's inedible, then the assumption is the oath includes even if he eats the tiniest amount. Well, then Rava has a follow-up question. What would be the halacha if shvua shelo ochel chartzan? He says, I swear I will not eat grape seeds. How much of these grape seeds would he have to eat to become liable? And here are the two possible arguments. Kivin de misachal ayidei taruves daite akazayis. Maybe here, even though, you know, on their own the grape seeds are not edible, but since they can be eaten with the rest of the grape, therefore maybe we assume that when he said, I won't eat grape seeds, the word eat was intended in the traditional sense of a significant amount, at least the kazayas. Odom, or maybe, kivin delo b'enei ochli le'inshi, since grape seeds on their own are not something that's considered edible, therefore, daite amashahu. Therefore, maybe we should say the same as we suggested by the dirt, that, you know, can't really talk about eating grape seeds at all, at least if you're discussing them, you know, by themselves, and therefore, even having the slightest amount would be a violation of the oath. Again, where it says teku, we don't have an answer to this question. Mark continues with another question on the assumption that the answer to the previous question is that by the grape seed case, the person only intends to prohibit, you know, it's only a violation of the oath if he has at least a kazayas. So the Gemara now asks, Bayu Ravashi. Ravashi asked, what about this case? What if you have a nazir, sh'amar shvua shelo ochal chartzon? What if a nazir made such an oath? A nazir, who of course cannot eat any grape products, made an oath. He said, I swear I will not eat grape seeds. And bekama, how much would he have to eat to be liable? The question here is, do we say, the kivin, the kazayas isura daraisahu, being that to eat a whole kazayas of grape seeds, anyways, be a biblical prohibition for this nazir. Therefore, perhaps we say, kiko mishtaba atera kamishtaba. We should say, presumably, when he proceeds to swear, I won't eat grape seeds, since it would be redundant to swear not to eat a kazayas amount of grape seeds, in fact, you know, that wouldn't work at all. Because, you know, you can't swear on something that there's already an oath about, and we all accepted the oath at Har Sinai not to violate the mitzvahs of the Torah. So being that, you know, such an oath would be totally redundant, therefore we should assume v'daite amashu, that, you know, he intended for his oath to be meaningful, that is, that he was prohibiting upon himself even a slight amount of grape seeds. Odama, or maybe, kivin the amar shelo ochal. Or maybe we say, since his words were, I swear I will not eat the grape seeds, so again, assuming that we say, like the first way in the previous question, so maybe we should still assume that daite akazayas, that the only thing he included in the oath is not to eat, you know, an amount that's halachically considered eating, at least the kazayas amount. And if we say this, then actually the shvua will be totally ineffective, as explained earlier, because there's already a pre-existing oath against doing this. It's already true that a nazir is prohibited from eating a kazayas of chartzim, of any grape product, including these grape seeds. The Gemara answers this question from the Mishnah that we'll learn below, which states as follows. Shvua shelo ochal. Somebody took an oath. He said, I swear I will not eat. V'yochal nevelos u'trefesh kotzim u'remasim. And he proceeded to consume things that are anyways forbidden by the Torah to eat, like an animal that was not properly shechted, or a treif animal, or the different creeping creatures that are prohibited, insects, things like that. The first opinion of the Mishnah says, chayev. He is still liable to bring a carbon if he goes ahead and violates the shvua and eats these non-kosher items. Rabbi Shimon poter. Rabbi Shimon exempts him from a carbon here. Now, vavinan ba, we ask on the first opinion, amai chayev. How does it make sense? How could the first opinion say that he's liable for the carbon of violating his oath? Why should this oath have any validity, seeing as how mushba ve'omer mi'ar sinayu is already a pre-existing oath? On our Sinai, we already accepted the oath to keep the mitzvahs of the Torah, which forbid these things. So it should be a totally redundant and ineffective oath. So how can the Tanakh say that no, it's an oath that makes him liable to a carbon? Now there are two approaches to answering this question, and the Gemara's point will be from the second approach. The first approach is Rav Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan, the Amri, they explain that the reason why this oath does go into effect is Bikol al Dvar Mamutaran in Dvar Masurin. It's because of the fact that with this oath, that now he just makes a general oath, I swear I will not eat. Well, that oath, of course, also includes kosher foods. Since the oath goes into effect for the kosher foods, it also goes into effect on even these non-kosher foods. But Reish Lakish, Amar, is a different approach. He says, Yata motze ela ibe mifaresh chatzi shior ve'aliba derabbanon ibe stam ve'aliba derabbi Akiva. The Amar Adam osar atzimu b'kolshu. Shlakish says like this, I'll explain why the oath in this Mishnah is not redundant, because when the Torah said that a person cannot eat these different non-kosher animals, that means like the real liability for that is if the person has shear. He eats the minimum amount that the Torah calls eating, namely a kezias amount. So the answer is, what this person's oath did was prohibit upon himself even less than the shear, even less than a kezias. Now, Reish Lakish explains further that, you know, how we get to that point of saying that the shvuah here prohibits even less than a kezias would depend on the dispute between the Rabbanan and Rabbi Akiva, who argue about, you know, what does a person mean when he says, I swear I won't eat something. The Rabbanan say that the presumption is he means only the minimal amount that the Torah defines as eating, at least to kezias, whereas Rabbi Akiva says no. He means to prohibit on himself even a minute amount. So Reish Lakish explains, if you're going like the Rabbanan, then it practically will have to say here that the person went out of his way in our case to explain that, you know, here I'm making an oath even on a very small amount. Whereas according to Rabbi Akiva, this would sort of be automatic. As soon as he says, I swear I won't eat, it means even a small amount. So either way, the point is, it's not a redundant shvuah because he is, you know, prohibiting something new that the Torah did not prohibit, namely eating even less than the shear, less than a kezias. The Gemara now makes its point. The Gemara points out that v'ha nevela, let's talk for example about a nevela, an animal that was not properly shechted. So of course, it's prohibited for consumption. Therefore, is described as a situation, the mushba v'omen mehar Sinai, where we all swore long ago not to eat from nevela. And so, the chi chartzon legabe nazir damya. Nevela, if we think about it, is the equivalent of our previous discussion regarding grape seeds vis-a-vis a nazir, that they too were prohibited to this nazir before he came along and made his oath. And the Gemara now points out that what did Reish Lakish say according to the Rabbanan? He said, "V'taim v'deparish." He said, if we talk about a case where this person specified that I prohibit upon myself to eat even a small amount, then, you know, that oath would be meaningful, for he's, you know, going beyond what the Torah had already stated. He's saying, I prohibit upon myself even a tiny amount. It's clear from Reish Lakish's explanation that ha lo parish, and had this person not went out of his way to explain that I'm prohibiting upon myself even a small amount, then our assumption would be that daite akezias, even though you're talking about something, this nevela, that is already a sin to eat that, eat a kezias of that. And so, like, really, to swear not to eat a kezias of nevela, that's totally redundant. There's no point of that. And yet, we still assume if the words that came out of this person's mouth were, I swear not to eat from this nevela, we assume that the person means, I won't eat a kezias of this nevela. So the Gemara says, Shmamina, so we learn from here, the answer to our above question is that Nazir swears, I won't eat grape seeds. We assume he means, I won't eat a kezias of the grape seeds, and so practically that means that the oath will not go into effect whatsoever, because it's redundant. We all already swore at our Sinai that the Nazir is forbidden from eating a kezias of grape seeds. The Gemara attempts to take this even further. The Gemara says, Ela tifshot debayi rava. Seemingly we can use this proof to also resolve Rava's question above, where he asked, Shvua shaloach halafar bekama. What if somebody says, I swear I won't eat dirt? How much dirt would he have to eat to be liable? Seemingly, based on the above, tifsha de'adi'ike kezayis, you can answer Rava's question that we see from the above, the person should not be liable unless he eats a whole kezayis of that dirt. And what's the connection? Deha nevela ke'ofer damya. For the case above of the nevela, this animal that's not kosher, wasn't shechted properly, is seemingly the equivalent of dirt. You know, both practically are not allowed to be eaten. V'taima deparish. And yet, let's make the same point that we just made above. Reish Lakish is evidently saying that it's only if the person went out of his way to explain that I'm swearing not to eat even amount less than a kezias, then we would interpret the oath that way. Halo parish. But if he added no such specification, we would assume daitea kezias, that the person is actually making a redundant oath that I swear not to eat Kazayas of Nevela. And so we should say the same thing here. We should assume that even though this dirt before his oath was not edible, but if he does swear not to eat this dirt, okay, we should interpret that as, you know, he's not going to eat the dirt. What does eat mean? It means at least the Kazayas of the dirt. But the Gemara rejects this step. For the Gemara says, lo, you can't really compare one case to the other. For afar lav barachilu klal, dirt is completely inedible. It's physically inedible, and therefore there's a strong argument to say that the whole notion of eating dirt doesn't really make sense. There's no such thing really. And so if he's making a shvua not to eat dirt, it means an oath not to consume even the slightest amount of dirt, as opposed to nevela basachila. This nevela meat, the meat from McDonald's, is edible physically, but v'ariyehu d'raviya ilava. What's the problem with the McDonald's meat? There's a lion, so to speak, crouching on top of it. That is, there's a Torah prohibition upon this meat. But since, in the final analysis, it is edible, tastes perfectly fine, therefore, there's a particular logic in this case to say that, you know, in spite of the lion that's sitting in it already, the Torah already said it's forbidden to eat this, but if a person comes along and says, I swear I won't eat it, then we assume he means I will not commit a true act of eating it, namely of eating an amount of at least a kazayas. So really the two cases are not comparable. Next mission begins. If shvua shelo ochal, somebody says, I swear I will not eat, v'ochal, v'shasa, and he then violates the shvua and eats and also drinks, says the Mishnah, eino chayv v'la'achas, he's only liable to one carbon. Because the drinking is included in eating. In halacha, you know, drinking is also considered an act of eating. However, if the person got more specific in his oath and said, Shvua shelo ochal v'shelo eshte, he said, I swear I will not eat, and I will not drink, v'yachal v'shasa, and then did those two different acts, then chayiv shtayim. Then he's liable to two korbanos, because here it's considered two separate oaths, one oath not to eat, one oath not to drink. Another similar kind of case, if a person swears shvua shelo ochal, he says, I swear I will not eat, v'yachal, pas chitin, upas oren, upas kusmin, he goes on and eats, and different types of bread, wheat, barley, spelt, and bread, all in one, you know, continuously not being aware that he was violating his oath, enochay v'lachas. In this case, he's only liable to one carbon, because there's only one oath here. However, if the language of his oath was shvua shelo ochal pas chitin upas seorin upas kusmin, if he got specific in the oath and he said, I swear I will not eat wheat bread or barley bread or spelt bread, v'yachal, and he ate all three types, chayv v'kolachas v'yachas, he'll be separately liable for each different type that he ate in violation of his oath, because again, we consider this like three different oaths. Mishnah continues, if he said shvua shelo eshta, somebody swore, I swear I will not drink v'shasa mashkin harbe, and drank many different types of beverages, enu chai v'lachas. He'll only be liable to one carbon. But if it was shvua shelo eshte yayin v'shemen v'dvash, again he got more specific and listed, I swear I will not drink wine, oil, or honey, v'shasa, and he drank all three types, chai v'lachas v'yachas, once again, be liable for each type that he drank. It's considered three different shvuos. Mishnah continues, if somebody swore shvua shelo ochal, somebody made a shvua, he said, I swear I will not eat, and later, v'yachal ochlen she'enen ruyen l'achila, he ate foods that are considered inedible, or v'shasa mashkin she'enen ruyen l'shsia, or he drank things that are not considered fit for drinking, potter. In these cases, he's exempt. It's not considered that he did an act of eating. If he swore shvua shelo ochas, I mean again, swore I will not eat, v'yachal nevela sutrefa shkatzim ramasim, and he ate non-kosher things, chayiv, says the first opinion, he is liable for violating the oath in spite of the fact that these things were anyways not kosher, and we discussed above the Tanakhama's rationale. Rabbi Shimon poter, Rabbi Shimon, however, exempts him from a carbon, for he makes the argument that these things were already prohibited at our Sinai, and so it was a redundant oath, which was completely ineffective. The Mishnah teaches one more case. The Mishnah says, if Amar Konam Ishti Nenis Li Imachalti Hayom, this person declares a conditional Konam on his wife. He says, my wife cannot benefit from me. It's a Konam prohibition to benefit from me if Imachalti Hayom. If I eat today, then that should trigger a konam that my wife is forbidden to benefit from me. And he proceeds to v'u'achal nevelos u'trefus shkatzim u'remasim. He goes on to eat foods that are not kosher. In this case, all opinions agree that hare ishto asura, that indeed he has triggered the konam. And that is because even Rabbi Shimon agrees that a person who eats non-kosher food it's considered he did an act of eating. Rav Shimon was only saying in the previous case that if one made an oath not to eat non-kosher things, that oath is redundant, is ineffective, because there's already an oath that we all accepted at Har Sinai not to eat these things. But in terms of if it happened to be that eating was a condition to trigger Yekonim, then of course, even if what he ate was not kosher, the fact is he physically ate, and therefore it would trigger this konam and create a prohibition of benefit on his wife.
You've been listening to RealClearDaf.com. Visit us online for resources or to dedicate a shiur. To speak with Rabbi Wise, call 855-ASK-RCD1. That's 855-275-7231.